the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7 here on ESPN 1000 and the brand new ESPN Chicago app. Thanks so much for tuning into the show tonight. We'll talk some college basketball with Fighting Illini superstar Sean Harrington. Played for those Flying Illini teams back in the day. We will get Sean's thoughts as an ESPN analyst about the Illini and everything else around college basketball coming up at 8:20. Tales from the Hood at 8:35 right here on ESPN 1000. And so it's one thing to be a player's manager. It's one thing to be a player's manager, someone or a player's coach. Someone, not necessarily the player's friend. I want to make sure that's very clear. It's something different, right? If you are a player's manager or player's coach, what you pretty much are is someone that's sitting down explaining to players what you want versus yelling and being demonstrative toward those players. Now, we have seen both in this city, right? There's perfect examples of someone that was an ass kicker and someone that was more of a philosopher. Joe Maddon did it his way. Ozzie Guillen did it his way. Joel Quenneville did it his way. Phil Jackson did it his way. Those are four coaches there. They're uniquely different, but they did it their way to be able to express to themselves to the players and say, this is what I need. There's always different ways to be able to coach and manage. You and I both know that as sports fans. But when it came to Joe Maddon, and I'm still on record saying that Joe should be managing the team, however, there was a problem, clearly, between Epstein and Maddon as far as the philosophy. It's weird for Theo Epstein, after there was a parting of the ways, firing, however you want to say it, whatever happened between those two, in which Maddon is now with the Los Angeles Angels and now with the Cubs, you hear Theo talk about that Joe was great, Joe was great for the team, he was great. Well, if he was great, how come he was not honored with a new contract? And there was always whispers from you and from others that was wondering about Joe Maddon as a manager. As a matter of fact, even winning the World Series, going through game 4, 5, 6, 7, when the Cubs defeated the Indians to win the World Series, there was always those whispers of, is Joe Maddon really a guy that is in control of his team, or is he on autopilot? All I know is that he was in the dugout for it. Ozzie Guillen was not as demonstrative and not as off the wall when the Sox won the World Series in 2005. He was just very direct with his players, told them what they expected. He would have meetings after a winning streak and not necessarily after a losing streak. The music would come on after a long losing streak sometimes. There's just a different way to be able to handle it. The things I will remember, and Jesse remembers this better than I do, Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs, what you remember is that there were times where Joe Maddon would say, we're only going to have three meetings, start of the season, after the All-Star break, and sometime in September. Maybe two or three meetings at most, and he would schedule them. Even if the team was down, he still would not pull them to the side and have a team meeting. He had them scheduled because he was a guy that did not want to be in the player's way. He wanted to manage them one-on-one, but not in front of everyone, because a lot of that is so passe. If you're a baby boomer or a Gen Xer, you look at certain managers from years past in baseball, like Billy Martin, Sparky Anderson, and guys that would fight players in the clubhouse or the dugout. I mean, that's great to go back on YouTube and look at those old clips, but you know that doesn't happen in 2020. You know that manager's not actually fighting with players, fist fighting with them. That doesn't happen anymore. Those are good old days, but it's not happening in 2020. It's more of a conversation. So I read Jesse's piece on ESPN.com. It says, Javier Baez, Cubs not always ready to start last year. So as it says here, Javier Baez promised a better pregame work ethic for himself and his teammates after the club missed the playoffs last season and then switched managers. He often believed they simply weren't ready for the first pitch last year. The narrative Baez spoke of backs up what the front office has intimated after hiring David Ross to replace Joe Maddon. Maddon presented a less is more attitude, which helped the team get to the World Series, but had been taken advantage of more recently, at least according to Baez. So instead of me talking and reading about it, let us hear from his own words. Let's go to Javier Baez. Baez says from NBC Sports Chicago that the Cubs just weren't ready for games last year.
I wasn't really going out there and preparing for the game. I was getting ready during the game, which is not good. But this year, I think we before the games, we gotta be everybody out there as a team, you know, and stretch as a team and be together as a team so we can play together.
Cubs were not ready for the games last year. Okay, so now let's hear from Joe Maddon. How does he respond to that?
I never recognized that from him. He's one of the best players in all of baseball. I think 30 teams would take off. So I don't really know what that's all about, quite frankly. Alluding to some early inning runs, we had some starters that had trouble early in the game, but he is one of the best players in the game. He's going to get even better than that. So whatever that is going on, I'm sure he'll fix it, but I never recognized him.
Some thoughts there from Joe Maddon. If you listen very closely, you can read between the lines of what he was saying. Not necessarily directed at Bias, just talking about other things with the Cubs. I don't know. When you're a professional, you have to get yourself ready. I don't need Mike Thomas to tell me that I've got to get myself ready for shows. My boss here at ESPN 1000. I don't need Craig Carmazon to tell me, hey, you got to get ready for this show. There is no pep talk for me or any of the hosts here. It's about philosophy. It's about work ethic. And either you have it or you don't. And I believe that Baez does have it. But the idea that they weren't ready for games last year, what is Joe Maddon supposed to do? I think that there's a certain mission statement, which I still believe in business. I believe that's in sports. I believe that overall that you have to have a mission statement in life. What are you? It is what it is from a marketing standpoint, 4 or 5 words to describe yourself. How do you describe Cubs baseball over the last few years under Joe Maddon? Sure, it was disappointing. It seems didn't seem like they were enthused, did not have that charisma and that feeling that they're going to win games the last couple of years, because it seems like we've seen a 2-year slump from this team offensively. And so at some point, you got to look in the mirror. Hopefully Baez is looking himself in the mirror and these other players and figuring out how they can get themselves better. There's always been this feeling, and Fred and I have gone back and forth about this, about the actual impact of a manager in baseball versus a head coach in football, a head coach in other sports. I believe that if you have a mission statement and you're staying on players, not in a negative way, but making sure that they realize what the goal is, I don't think that's a bad thing. But I don't think managers just sit there in the dugout and sleep. We haven't seen that since Tommy Lasorda, when he was the manager for the Dodgers. He actually was sleeping in the dugout when he was managing the Dodgers. So I look forward to seeing, now that Baez has said that, if there's a new approach for this Cubs team, and how does Ross approach it for the Cubs as a manager? We'll keep our eyes on that. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. I'm looking forward to the upcoming season, the second half of the season for the NBA. We had a great, great time watching the entire city and the entire country watching All-Star Weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as the NBA, and it was a great feeling, and had this feeling of pride to know that Chicago did it right, and they did a tremendous job of putting a great event on a huge spotlight. The NBA All-Star Weekend was great. We hadn't seen it since I was, a sophomore, junior in high school. And now look at where the NBA is now. A far cry from 1988, now look at where the NBA is. Star-studded event, entertainers, sports celebrities, past and present, it was great. So now that that's gone and the streets are cleared, now I'm looking forward to the second half of the season for the NBA. Let me go through 10 things I'm looking forward to for the second half of the season. So number 10, I'm looking forward to the development of Wendell Carter Jr. and Coby White and Chandler Hutchinson, some of the young players on this Bulls roster. You know, the injuries of Markkanen and Otto Porter Jr. And others, I'm just looking forward to seeing those guys get healthy. Otto Porter Jr. in particular, because he's got a lot of money coming his way next year if he exercises that contract. So I want to see him back on the floor sooner than later. But the number 10 thing, I'm looking forward to seeing the development of young players for this Bulls team. And by the way, as the Nets drop without Kyrie Irving playing, they're dropping in the East. Could the Bulls actually make the playoffs? That very well could happen. You take a look at the bottom of the East, the Bulls actually could make the playoffs. Even with the injuries they have and the Nets not playing well, Detroit is gutting their team. Reggie Jackson now is with the Clippers. Let's keep our eyes on the Bulls and that development. Number nine, the Trailblazers are at 25-31 in Portland. Dame Dollar, he did a great job on Saturday for All-Star weekend. That guy is talented as a basketball player and as an artist. I want to see if the Trailblazers drop out of the top eight. They are not in the playoffs right now. Well, can they get to the top eight? Will they drop out of the top eight in the West? Let's keep our eyes on that because they have some terrific players, but in this very packed West, the Trailblazers, as much as Dame Dollar is so much fun to watch, I can't imagine him not being in the playoffs. Number eight on my list is a couple of surprises. My two surprises so far for the first half of the NBA season is Memphis and Oklahoma City. I had no idea that Memphis, that young core led by Ja Morant, I had no idea that Memphis would be this good and being one of the top eight teams in the West. Oklahoma City, you remember the deal, right? Paul George leaves and goes to Los Angeles Clippers. And you take a look at Oklahoma City now with Chris Paul, that team is competing and playing hard. That team, it could be make the playoffs, and I didn't expect that at all. With Chris Paul being there, but it's happening. It's pretty good so far. Number seven, the 76ers. Are you really going to go out like that, 76ers, after that whole thing, trust the process? Think about this, Bulls fans. If you have a team that has bottomed out, they just have all these draft picks and stockpile these draft picks and lose on purpose, and then put yourself in a position to compete in the Eastern Conference, and yet you underachieve there too. The Sixers fans don't like that. That's exactly what's happening. Philadelphia is 9-19 on the road. They've got issues. Here's the difference, okay? You have Ben Simmons who does not shoot threes, and Joel Embiid, who's not necessarily in the greatest basketball shape. Even though he looked pretty good in that All-Star game, that's not Embiid on a regular basis. Let's keep our eyes on that story. Number six, Zion Williamson, the rest of the season. Don't know if the Pelicans are going to make the playoffs, but Zion is a guy that has a huge spotlight on him because he's next in the NBA. Not just because he's the number one draft pick, but because of what he brought to the table coming out of Duke, coming into the NBA. We hadn't seen him since, I think his debut was middle of January. So just to see him on the floor is a positive for the NBA. Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks. You talk about a team that wasn't very good for a few years. You add pieces around a young player like Luka Doncic, and all of a sudden, Doncic is a difference maker in a big way, one of the best players in the league quickly for the Dallas Mavericks. Let's keep our eyes on Dallas and Luka because he's one of the future stars of this league. The Battle of Los Angeles is number four. You got one team. The Lakers are 41-12. The Clippers are 37-18. It's quite the battle in the West. As I mentioned, Reggie Jackson has just signed with the Clippers. So that adds more shooting depth. I think the Clippers are going to be the best team coming out of Los Angeles before it's all squared away. It's really interesting to watch. The Toronto-Milwaukee battle at the top of the East. So two dates I'm looking at, February 25th and April 1st. Toronto-Milwaukee will take on each other in regular season play. Hopefully both teams are healthy enough to be able to watch both of those teams because I think that Toronto can push Milwaukee to at least six or seven games if they match up in the playoffs. Milwaukee is the best, as you well know, in the Eastern Conference, but Toronto, even without Kawhi, with Pascal Siakam and others, have done a really good job with the Raptors. The momentum from the All-Star game is number two. So, as I mentioned, just the pageantry, all the pomp and circumstance around what happened at All-Star weekend here in Chicago. Now, you start seeing maybe more attendance. You might be able to see the TV ratings go up a little bit more, the radio ratings go up a little bit more, because maybe from the All-Star game and everything else, maybe some momentum can be garnered from that. And parity. So some of you love to complain about the lack of parity in the NBA, not realizing that the NBA is really based on dynasties, the Bulls dynasty, Celtics, Lakers, Detroit, San Antonio. It's about dynasties. And so I don't know who's going to win the championship. And actually, that's a good thing now, because whoever's going to win the championship, maybe they'll start their own dynasty themselves in the NBA. So that's among some of the 10 things I'm looking forward to in the second half of the NBA season. Coming up next, we talk more basketball of the college variety with Sean Harrington. We get his thoughts on the Illini and other stories around college basketball. Do you know the tournament and March Madness is right around the corner? We'll talk to Sean about that next right here on UTH.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Follow on Twitter at TweetJHood. You love college sports.
Shake! Crossover! Step back! Ah! At the buzzer! Cold-blooded!
You've come to the right place.
Oh, tough shot.
Coleman lands!
Chicago's college tailgate.
There's a steal by Jordan Blount. Here comes Jordan Blount for the Flames. Over the top to Marcus Adi as he hangs from the chandelier.
On Chicago's home for sports.
Oh. Gets it back, saves it to Mooney over his head. Off to Hub. Alley up to Durham, who drives it home.
ESPN 1000.
All over. Here's the shot. Oh, my goodness.
Here's Jonathan Hood.
It's Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the brand new ESPN Chicago app. Glad that you're with us. Let's talk some college basketball with Sean Harrington from ESPN. He's got Tulsa, Houston tomorrow on ESPNU. And the Fighting Illini with us here on ESPN 1000. Sean, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely, thanks.
I want to get your thoughts on how many teams you think could make the tournament out of the Big Ten. It seems pretty deep this year.
Yeah, it's as deep as I can ever remember it. And outside of Northwestern and Nebraska, I mean, everybody at this point has a fighting chance. And I would say Minnesota has probably hurt themselves here recently. They would be that other team. So realistically, 10 teams and the possibility of 11 could really make it from the Big Ten. And obviously, that all depends on what happens around the country. Do you get some bid stealers along the way in conferences that are one bid leagues normally that get two? So a lot of that has to play out. But when you look at the resumes and you look at the quality wins and the records of the teams in the Big Ten this year, I would really be surprised if 10 don't get in. And like I said, the outside chance that they can maybe get 11.
I know Coach Collins at Northwestern wishes he was part of that mix because it's just – Sean, it's just been a very frustrating year for them, it's just about talent. They've come close in a lot of games, and of course, close are not victories, but you know that you're at least in the ballpark, and it's just been tough. This is a team, a few years ago, we looked at Collins and said, hey, you got your team into the NCAA tournament, but those good times are not there right now for Collins and the Cats.
No, it's a young team right now, so you're going to take some of your growing pains along the way, and some of those guys are learning on the job. I think the best thing for a young team is when you can go back and look at the film and see your mistakes, that's the biggest teaching tool. You can sit in the film room and see what other guys are doing and try to learn from it, but when you actually go through it yourself, I think the learning curve drastically improves and it's much quicker process when you go through it. But, yeah, obviously they're struggling this year. You know, the new arena is beautiful, but I thought they lost a little bit of momentum when they had to go off campus to play those games. And I think that hurt them a little bit there. And, obviously for the program in the long run, it's a great thing to have the new stadium and everything, but had everything going there for them for a little bit and then just lost some of that momentum. And, you know, just, it goes to show you how hard it is to keep programs going and in the year in and year out to compete at that level. And Coach Collins has done a terrific job, and he's going to continue to do a really good job there. But, you know, struggling right now, and it's a tough thing when you're on top. Now everybody wants to take a shot at you, too, when they finally get to the NCAA tournament. Now you're not sneaking up on anybody anymore. So when you walk into the gym, you know, they respect Northwestern, and it's not a game that sometimes teams would maybe just look over in the past, and then you can sneak up on some teams.
College basketball analyst Sean Harrington with Jonathan Hood. A little Chicago's college tailgate for you here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. The job that Brad Underwood has done with the Illini has just been tremendous. Seeing the Illini in primetime games, Sean, in meaningful games I tell you, that's a real turnaround from the Gross era. What stands out most about the job Underwood has done with the Illini?
Yeah, and they're starting to get some really good players. Obviously, that's the biggest thing, is when you can start getting some elite players in your system, into your program, you get others that follow through. And let's be honest, the better players you have, the better chance you have at winning. And you can coach them up all you want, but at the end of the day, guys have to make plays. And now they've got some players in there that are making some plays, that are winning some ball games for them. And then you have to win the big-time games. And obviously going through a little bit of a tough stretch right now in some of these primetime games, when you see the Maryland's come in, you see the Michigan State's come in, those are the games when those start going your way, that's when you know you're really an elite team and at the top of the conference. But, you know, an exciting season for the fans, something that they've really wanted and been begging for here over the last several years. So, great that the fans are into it, and State Farm has been rocking again, and crowds are coming in, and there's a lot to be excited about with Illinois basketball. And he's got them playing hard. There's no question about that. Every night you watch them, they're playing hard. I think the thing that they're missing right now is probably just that extra shooter. Really only two guys shooting over 30% from three. And in this day and age, when you're playing the way that college basketball is played, you got to be able to make some shots from three. They're just not able to make them at a consistent basis. And really only two guys on the floor that are real threats at any time when you're talking about Griffin and Frazier. So kind of missing that outside shooter, just one more guy to kind of add to the pieces. But they'll continue to get that. And obviously there's a lot of excitement in Champaign right now.
So a surprise in the offseason for college basketball before this season was John Beilein taking the job with the Cleveland Cavaliers, because I didn't see that coming. There was no rumors about that. I know the Cavs were looking to move forward and do something different, but John Beilein was so successful with Michigan, a solid program, and he makes that leap to the pros. And the story here during the All-Star break of the NBA, Sean, I'm sure you've seen it as well, is that there's going to be a disconnect here between Beilein and the Cavs sometime soon here, because there's an upheaval with the players. It just doesn't seem to be working for Beilein and the players as far as communication. What is, from your experience, what is the biggest difference in coaching college and coaching in the pros? Like, what has Beilein gone through? What has been kind of the stumbling block, you think?
Yeah, I think when the guys on the payroll are making more than you, it's kind of hard to, maybe force your will on some guys or get them to buy in necessarily. And obviously John Beilein, very successful college coach. What he did at Michigan, West Virginia was extremely impressive. And, shorter clock. So when you start looking at shot clock and you're looking at 24 seconds as of 30, things that you did in college may not work in the pros, getting guys in different situations where they can score the basketball. So it's a completely different game, but if you can coach basketball, you can coach basketball. And I know John Beilein can coach basketball, so probably just winning over the locker room is the biggest thing, and then just finding a style that's going to work in the NBA. But, it's not just John Beilein. You look around, how many coaches have really gone from college to pro and been, really successful? And Brad Stevens is probably one that comes to mind, but there's been some really good college coaches that have made the leaps, and Calipari and Patino, and just things haven't worked out in the NBA. So it there's no question, it's completely different games, completely different locker room, and there's a learning curve there where you may not succeed in your first one. You may have to get a second chance sometime.
What is, in your view, the most underrated conference in college basketball?
Oh, it's I would say right now, I'm doing some games in the American, and mm-hmm. I'm shocked that finally you're seeing there's maybe three teams involved there. But if that's a one or a two bid league, I would say that for sure would be an underrated conference. I think there's teams in there good enough. Houston probably does not get the respect that they deserve. They have done extremely well in conference the last 2 years, and then made runs in March as well the last 2 years. And for them to not even really get a whole lot of looks in the top 25 week in and week out, is one thing. And then Wichita State, a team that's playing that had some big non-conference wins against VCU, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. You know, just to name a few that they played against, played tough against West Virginia. So very capable teams in that league. So if they get three or four teams, I think that's what they deserve. But if they end up getting one or two, I would say that's one that probably got disrespected.
Sean Harrington from ESPN with Jonathan Hood on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I'll ask you about parity, Sean, lastly, because I think that this season has been very interesting, in which there's not necessarily one team I look at and say, boy, that team is the mountaintop. You got to go get them. How have you seen the season overall? Because as much as I like Baylor, watching San Diego, some of these other teams, I don't see them as the top of the top. I think there's a lot of top teams that are very similar.
Yeah, we've seen so many number ones get beat by unranked teams throughout the year as well. So usually by this time of year, you can kind of pinpoint four or five teams that you'd be surprised if one of those four or five didn't win it. I think you could probably go 10 to 12 teams at this point that you'd have to kind of include that could win it. And the way this season's gone could come from outside of that. But I do think that Gonzaga has been really good all year long. I think they've been very consistent all year long. You know, a lot of times, because once they get in the conference, they're not playing those elite teams week in and week out. You forget about them or just kind of say, yeah, they're just winning because they're playing in the West Coast Conference. But I think they are very good. Baylor has been extremely impressive all season long, and I think Kansas is playing some of their best basketball right now. So those three teams are separating themselves from the rest of the pack. But I don't know if you can say right now that you'd be shocked if one of those three teams didn't win the NCAA tournament. I think a lot of teams still could give them a chance, and it is equal across the board in college basketball as we've seen in a long time.
Two of the top teams in the American, Tulsa and Houston. Sean will be on the call on ESPNU tomorrow. Sean, as always, I appreciate it. We'll hope to talk to you in March as we get closer to the madness.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right, it is Sean Harrington from ESPN, college basketball analyst with us here on ESPN 1000. Tales from the Hood is next.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Hi, everybody.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Under the Hood on ESPN 1000.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball Welsh Ryan Arena on Sunday when they host Minnesota at 2 o'clock. Tickets on sale now, NUSports.com, NUSports.com. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. We're loaded tonight with a lot of interesting stories. First and foremost, Janet Dubois, who was the nosy neighbor in Good Times, Wilona Woods, has passed away at the age of 74. Her family reports that she passed away in her sleep. It was unexpected. Of course, she was part of that great sitcom, Good Times, and she would always, for some reason, the family would always have their door open, and here comes Wilona coming right through the door to be that nosy neighbor on Good Times. But she passed away. Something I did not know. She co-wrote and sang the classic theme song for the Jeffersons, Moving On Up. I did not know that she was an accomplished singer, but if you've ever watched the Jeffersons, the Moving On Up, the sitcom from CBS back in the late 70s, early 80s, which is still popular today through syndicated cable channels. Yeah, I didn't know that that she was the lead singer in that. She was in I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. She was in Charlie's Angels, in Martin, the Wayans Brothers, Everybody Loves Raymond. So, rest in peace, Janet Dubois, who was a great character actor with good times back in the day. Wow, she was terrific.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
So what is love? What is really love? We're going to answer that question in just a moment because I want to see if you agree with me that this is a little bit strange. But first, if you're a dog owner, if you take more photos of your pet than your spouse, there might be a problem, right? So this story coming from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, if you find yourself posting more pictures of your dog than your spouse, you're not alone. The results of a study from Rover.com. I remember Rover. It didn't work out too well in Chicago on the radio, but nonetheless. The results of a study from Rover.com, a site that connects dog owners with dog sitters, exposes the results of the never-ending obsession with taking pictures of pets. The study shows that 65% of dog owners admit to taking more photos of their dog than their significant other. The study also reveals that nearly half of the people polled said that they find it harder to leave their dog for a week than their human counterpart. 94% of dog owners consider their dogs to be part of the family. 56% greet their dog as soon as they walk through the door. This is all from Rover.com. Okay.
Under the hood, behind the scenes, nobody really sees.
That is an issue. And hold on, Madden, because that is an issue. And the reason why it's an issue is because, look, man, I mean, if you are more into your dog than your spouse or someone else in the house, then you have the issue. I think that if you have love, you want to spread that love to everybody, right? I mean, not just the dog, but also, you know, the daughter, the son, your wife or husband. Do you love your dog more than you love your wife or your husband? That's a disconnect for me. I mean, that's an animal, and you can love him as much as anyone else in the house, but when you love the dog or the animal more than the actual person, maybe that you need to cut the person out of your life. Maybe that's the issue. Gee, I mean, that's a lot of love for just a pet. Can't you love everyone equally? No? Okay. Then maybe you need to look in the mirror. You and the pet should look in the mirror. Let's talk a little bit about love. You know, I'm a big fan of Questlove, and I think that they do a great job on The Tonight Show when I'm watching them play, because I think they add a lot to The Tonight Show when Jimmy Fallon does not sometimes. But Rosario Dawson was on The Tonight Show, and there's Questlove, the leader of the band, and there was a question about whether or not Questlove and Rosario Dawson actually were on a date. Listen.
We were just talking about you maybe a couple months ago because we had a hashtag called Worst First Date. And our very own Questlove sent a tweet out and he said, had dinner with Rosario Dawson. Let Mos Def and his three bros crash the party. Mos casually ordered her a $500 birthday cake. It wasn't her birthday. Six more people crashed. Bill was $1,400. I didn't have $1,400. Worst first date and last first date. Do you remember this date?
Was that a date?
It was a dinner.
It was a dinner?
No, wait a minute. Wait, why are you trying to play me?
You know what it is? We're so New York. Well, I'm New York, obviously.
It was a dinner.
It's a thing of like... I feel like...
But you totally backpedaled so fast. He's like, it's a dinner. You're the one who said it was a date.
No, it's like it's the Love Jones kind of, like, era where, like, we hung out and maybe there was, like, something there, but we were not explicit about it, so it was hard to even know, maybe. Because it was also, if it was a date, there was, like, 10 dudes on it. Like, I didn't know. Like,
it's like the Bachelorette, yeah.
You're like, no, but...
Hey!
Yeah, but
who did you give the rose to?
Did
you get a rose?
No, I got the bill.
No, you got the bill. You didn't get a rose. He gave him the bill. That's fantastic.
You know, but we stayed friends.
Okay, good.
So
good,
that's
all
the
right.
Most important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look at you blushing.
I can't blush.
Okay, Davis, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I don't understand what she means by the Love Jones era, because I don't understand that. Like, if the Love Jones era, if you're talking about the movie with Lorenz Tate, Chicago's Own, that was the classic love movie, you know, love story of man chases woman, man gets away from woman, woman gets away from man, man feels bad, woman feels bad, but yet they're still apart and they're trying to get back together. And it doesn't happen at the end, which is a great movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. So so if you are with a group of people, other couples, right, and you are with Rosario Dawson, is that not a date or is that just a gathering? What do you call that?
It definitely sounded like he thought it was a date. He took her out to a restaurant. It was dinner. The dinner was crashed. what she meant by the Love Jones era. I think in that era, especially, we had places like the Wild Hair, and we had a lot of local clubs that did poetry on certain nights. I think people would go out as groups, and it wasn't so much about going out with a date. It was much more just about going out and enjoying poetry and a good time and drinks with friends and things of that nature. It was much more laid back, I think, around that time that Love Jones came out. But in the same breath, you know, if a young man asks you out and you accept and then you go out with him, I consider that a date. I don't know why he backtracked like, oh, it was dinner. Like, no, it's a date. It's a dinner date. That's exactly what it is. Like, don't get on national TV and let her play you like that, man. It's like, stick to your guns. It was a date.
I mean, he really embodies his own name, Questlove. He's in a quest to be able to be with this woman. It's like, and the Love Jones thing is like, it's like the TV show, the short run TV show For Your Love, right? It was about three couples, you know, being together, and you go out as, I don't know, as, you know, with, you know, 2, 4, 6 people at the same time. And that's, but to me, that's a date. But he's just complaining about the bill. So I guess that just wasn't going to work.
Man, that $1,400, I still will be looking for Mos Def. $500 birthday cake? Ooh. But you know what, you know, Mos Def was trying to pull the Bill Bellamy from Love Jones.
I see.
Yeah, he was trying to pull the Bill Bellamy. He didn't have too much respect for Questlove on that date. He thought he could sneak right on in.
Yes, I recall that very well. You have to see that, by the way, if you have not seen Love Jones. What a terrific movie based in Chicago. Hyde Park in particular. It's one of my favorite movies of all time because I lived that once. So one other thing that I just want to bring this up. This is in the New York Post. I just got to get this out. So because of the virus that is out there right now, right? The coronavirus. It's a real concern right now. And you can act, there's a company that actually will do a mask of your face, right? So faceidmask.com will actually do a mask of your face. So that way, if you have one of those phones that has face recognition, that you don't have to pull the mask off, you could just put your mask on there and it'll pick up, the phone will pick it up. That's a new thing right now that actually is happening. Apple came up with this 3D face unlock a few years ago and called it Face ID. So now because of the coronavirus, if you are walking around the airport or work with a mask and you don't want to take it off because you're afraid someone's got a coronavirus or you don't want to get sick, there is a mask of your face that can be made and will pick up on Apple. So there you go. There's technology for you. That's a waste of money. I would never do that, but it's out there if you care to have it. And that, my friends, is Tales from the Hood, a Tuesday edition right here on ESPN 1000. Coming up, Joakim Noah with some thoughts about how close the Bulls were to be able to get over the mountaintop when he was with the Bulls. We'll get to that coming up. Also still to come, some thoughts on baseball at the top of the hour. The Cubs and Sox, how close are they as both teams? Who's going to be better in the 2020 season? We'll get to that coming up right here on Under the Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. It's Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the brand new ESPN Chicago app. Glad that you're with us here on this Tuesday. Got Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday coming your way at 9:35. The innovator of violence, Tommy Dreamer, longtime ECW wrestler, now has his own company, House of Hardcore. If you're a wrestling fan or know of one, tell them to come to their listening device. Tell them to come to the ESPN Chicago app and listen to Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday at 9:35 right here on ESPN 1000. We'll have baseball coming up at 9:03 with my friend David Schoenfield from ESPN.com. is a senior writer on Major League Baseball. We'll get to him coming up after SportsCenter. You know, growing up here in Chicago, you know this like I know it as well, is that even teams that don't win are revered sometimes, right? Ultimately, it's about your favorite team winning a championship. But even those teams that fell short, like, you know, the 69 Cubs still talked about today, even though they fell short, it's still a team that's revered. Same thing with the other Cub teams or White Sox teams are in the playoffs, but they fell short. The Bulls, Bears, same thing. But with the Bulls, in that Tom Thibodeau era, it was very difficult for any team in the East, including the Bulls, to be able to get over the LeBron James hump. Because LeBron was just that strong, that Cavs team was just good enough to be able to hold everyone down. That's really the essence of the NBA, right? Because of there's so many dynasties. Teams get on a roll, they start winning conference championships, they start winning NBA championships, and it's hard to be able to stop a team that's on a roll with a dynasty. And when Tom Thibodeau came around as the head coach for the Bulls, and D. Rose was there as the MVP and as a leader of this team, and Joakim Noah and Lou Alding, those are good teams. They had some memorable moments, but they fell short. And even in 2020, I still run into people that talk about Derrick Rose and what could have been if he would have stayed healthy, what could have happened. But, you know, even at full strength, it was hard for the Bulls to be able to get past LeBron and the Cavs because just like it was for Jordan, it was hard for teams in the East to get past Jordan and the Bulls. It's hard for teams in the West to get past Magic or getting past Kobe and Shaq. It's just the way it is with these dynasties in the NBA. So some thoughts from Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah was on Pardon My Take, and you could just hear the kind of frustration and just kind of the memories he had playing here in Chicago. And if he came through a restaurant or a bar in the city, you know that he can get free drinks. He'd get a free meal because people know how hard that guy worked for a guy that was the sixth best player he was the sixth best player at Florida when he was starting. And you can only have five, right? So he was a guy that didn't have a lot of offensive skill, skinny kid from Florida, but he had a motor. And I think that was a real attraction for the Bulls to bring him in as a defensive player, not necessarily an offensive guy, as you and I both know, but he just had this motor and this will to be able to push the ball uphill, trying to help the Bulls. So Joakim Noah, with his thoughts about how the Bulls were so close to winning the East.
For how long was Tom Thibodeau's office bugged by management?
Oh, shit. You're going right away.
Yeah, well, you just said I could ask anything.
We're not f***ing around. Look, got real. Tibbs is the best, man. Tibbs is a warrior, somebody who, you know, we were so close,
yep.
and the injuries kind of derail things a little bit, you know. But, you know, I look back at those years and, man, we were right there, and I got nothing but love for all those guys, you know. You know, if there was a bug, whatever, you know, that's not what it's about.
Right,
you know,
let's, for me,
it's all, I just look at the good and, you know, Tibbs helped us, you know, get there. So we were almost at the promised land. It didn't go down. Bug or no bug. We love you, Tibbs.
So it's interesting because the Tibbs era Bulls, there was always the idea that he might have pushed guys too hard during the regular season, so then you get to the playoffs and you don't have everything. You know, load management has become a big thing in the NBA.
Mm.
But you've always said he pushed you exactly how, like, without him, you wouldn't have been the player that you were.
I mean, but we were, I mean, you know, it's easy to look back now, you know, with the injuries and talk about, you know, what didn't go well. But the truth is, we were right there.
Mm-hmm.
We almost got the chip. If it wasn't for the injuries, I mean, in my mind,
you think that year when the game one against the Sixers, round one, think if Derrick Rose doesn't go down, that's it?
I think we're holding the trophy up.
You were the best team in the league that year. We got the trophy.
In my mind, still to this day, there's no question. Nobody was f***ing us.
Mm-hmm. That hurts me.
Interesting perspective from Joakim Noah. That guy wanted it. A whole Bulls team wanted it. And for those that blamed Tom Thibodeau for the injuries, I mean, the Bulls have their share of injuries now. How come no one's calling me to blame Tom Thibodeau for the Bulls' injuries in 2020? This is something that occurred that was really unfortunate. And yes, is he demanding? Is he a guy that wanted the most out of these players? Absolutely. Because he knew that with the Cavs on the other side of the tracks, you had to be able to find a whole bunch of different players with a whole bunch of different skill sets to try to get around that Cavs team and try to beat LeBron. As you well know, LeBron has lost in the finals before, but it's never easy. He's just not going to roll over. Even in his advanced age with the Lakers right now, leading that team, it's hard to beat LeBron now with the Lakers. We'll see what happens in the playoffs, but this is why he holds the mantle as the player in 2020 until he passes the torch to someone else. Maybe that's Giannis. Maybe it's Zion. Who knows? But it was really close. It was, and there were some really good games between the Cavs and the Bulls. But, of course, the Bulls fell short. And that's the history is with the winners and the Eastern Conference champions and eventually NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers when LeBron made his return. All right, coming up, we'll talk Cubs, Sox, and everything else, MLB, with David Schoenfield. We'll get his thoughts about how close the Cubs and Sox are to contending again. That's next on UTH.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.